Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And we welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us on WSBT Radio. We're brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. By Blackthorn Golf Club. It's the Blackthorn card. Only $99. Get great savings with that Blackthorn golf card, including up to 80% off rounds of golf. We're also brought to you by Laban Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at labaninsurance.com. And Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. Great to have you with us on this Monday as we are back at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. The South Bend Cubs opening up a six-game homestand. They will take on the Burlington Bees tonight, the Midwest League affiliate of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And the Burlington lineup features a very familiar face. In fact, he is taking swings in the batting cage right now. Hitting third for Burlington tonight will be Torrey Hunter Jr., the former Fighting Irish wide receiver, the son of the great Minnesota Twin and LA Angel outfielder, Torrey Hunter Sr., and he is right now on a roll with the bat 14 for his last 27, I do believe, and his batting average up in the 280s, and we had the chance to talk to Torrey earlier today. You will hear that conversation coming up, and Eric will have a story in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com on a good guy that came through the Notre Dame football program, Torrey Hunter Jr. So we'll have that conversation coming up in just a couple of moments here on WSBT Radio. We're going to have Jared Young joining us in the booth in just a little bit. He is an infielder for the South Bend Cubs. He is off to a solid start this year. 315 the average, 383 the on-base percentage, 3 home runs, and 11 driven in. So the Old Dominion product, Jared Young, a former goaltender into his mid-teens from Canada, will join us. He's a part of the South Bend Cubs organization, I guess, from his hockey days. We have a My 5 question of the day in honor of Torrey Hunter Jr. being in the house. The 5 best wide receivers during the Brian Kelly era. There's some pretty good people to choose from. And next hour, we'll have an update on Notre Dame baseball. And our guy, Nico Cavadas from Penn High School, he was on the program last week, has just been named the ACC Player of the Week. How about that? It 667 at a home run against Pittsburgh, at a home run against Western Michigan. Congratulations to the Penn freshman for picking up that honor. We'll talk a little Cubs and Cardinals, rapid fire, and a whole lot more coming up over the next hour and 50 minutes here on WSBT Radio. Eric, good to see you. Hope you had a good weekend.
I did, and I was silent about it for a second, but I did have a very good weekend.
You were stumped by my question.
I was stumped by your question.
They're only going to get harder, let me tell you.
This is like the cash cab.
It is. That's right. Wow, there's a show for you. Well, I had a great weekend in Peoria. It was 84 degrees at first pitch on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So we had beautiful weather for some Midwest League baseball, little Cubs and Cardinals, Midwest League style, and the Cubbies took 2 out of 3 from the Chiefs in that series. So the Cubs salvaged the final 2 games of that 6-game road trip. They went 2-4, and now they'll take on the Angels affiliate, the Burlington Bees, coming up at 7:05 here on WSBT Radio. The pregame comes your way at 6:50. If you want to broadcast the game tonight, you can, because they don't have a broadcaster in Burlington this year. So if you've ever want to broadcast a baseball game, I'll give you a microphone and a tape player, and away you go.
Maybe I'll go sit over there and write my story.
You could do that, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, that booth is available. Or if you just want to talk to yourself, be in that booth and no one hear you.
There was a real nice lady that came in a few minutes ago. I think she thought I was you.
Oh, okay.
And she asked me how I was doing and if we could talk Wednesday morning. And I said, well, I don't think I'm going to be here. And she goes,
oh, come on.
She's very nice, though.
So apparently I have something on my schedule Wednesday morning I was not familiar with.
She's very sweet. You will want to talk to her.
Well, good. Well, I don't have an agent, but if you want to act as my agent, you're not going to have a whole lot to do, and there's not a lot of money, but I'll put you in charge of my doings from now on. All right, let's get to a little Torrey Hunter Jr. conversation as we had the chance to talk to Torrey a little bit ago. Let's give you a little background before we hear from Torrey Hunter Jr. in case some of our listening audience does not remember Torrey, a member of the Fighting Irish football program, outstanding wide receiver. Eric, there was a time where there was a thought he could be a third, fourth-round pick in the National Football League draft. And then, of course, it was the Texas game a couple of years ago. He took the brutal hit in the end zone, helmet to helmet. To this day, I don't think there has been a worse call made in a Notre Dame football game, or should I say not made, as that was the definition of an ugly hit and
targeting.
And Torrey was injured in that game, and we are very thankful it was not worse than it actually ended up being. But it's something I asked him during our media session today. Did that hit really change your life? And he's going to answer that coming up in a couple of moments. But how do you remember Torrey Hunter Jr., the football player at the University of Notre Dame?
A guy that really had some bad luck with injuries. You know, right before he got to Notre Dame, he was getting ready to play in an all-star football game in January down in San Antonio and suffered a broken leg in that practice session. And so he missed the spring baseball season. Mm-hmm. Then he missed the whole next year for Notre Dame football. And then his sophomore year, it seemed like he had some issues with injuries his sophomore year. And it was just hard to get him on the field and healthy. And then his last year, when he really had a chance to let the NFL know what kind of player they might be getting. Again, the hit from Deshaun Elliott down at Texas. And then some injuries late in the year that wiped out some games for him. So you never got the feel that you really saw the best of Torrey Hunter Jr. I remember talking to Mike Denbrock. We had him on our show one season. Was it the 2016 season, Darren?
Yes.
And he was breathless about how good Torrey Hunter could be and how much good football he had ahead of him. But it just wasn't to be. And now he's playing minor league baseball, was drafted a couple times both out of high school and then while he was still playing football at Notre Dame in the 23rd round by the Angels. So he's gone that route, but I think we'll never really know what a good football player he could have been.
Well, he has taken now his career into baseball, was drafted by the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and really he did not get many swings at the University of Notre Dame. He was a pinch runner. He played in an exhibition game here against the South Bend Cubs, so there was a good amount of time in his life that he did not have a baseball bat in his hand, so it took him a little time.
12 official at-bats between his junior year in high school and his first spring training swings. 12 official at-bats.
Well, it's going to take him a little time. We knew that for him to get into a good feel, being a professional baseball player, to hardly get any at-bats as a college player, and then you jump up a level to professional baseball. It's going to take a little time. Started to turn the corner last year, short season baseball, got off to a slow start with Burlington, but over the last 2 weeks, he has really caught fire, and his numbers to date, 24 games for the Bees, 92 at-bats, hitting .283 with a .376 on-base percentage, a home run, 9 RBI, 15 walks, with 32 strikeouts. So he's striking out one every three at-bats, which is, in today's baseball, I think kind of average, unfortunately.
It was higher initially. He was at one point, Darren, on April 21st, he was hitting .120, and I think he had more strikeouts than anything else. And he's just really been on a tear lately. And stealing a lot of bases. I mean, he's 9 for 10 this year. And he's scoring a lot of runs. He's playing good defense. So he's caught on. He was pretty good at Orem last year once he got a chance to play with their short season club.
Mm-hmm.
He was outstanding for them. He was among the league leaders in all the categories. .352 average in a league where – there's a lot of big numbers. 432 on base percentage, 441 slug. But, I mean, so the beginning of this year was really out of character for him. But again, you know, you missed so many years of development with 12 at-bats basically over a four-year period of official at-bats. So there's going to be some peaks and valleys as he tries to work his way up to the next level, which I think is Inland Empire in the high A league out in California.
One assist, no errors for Hunter in the outfield so far this year. And since April 29, Torii Hunter Jr. is 14 of 27. Only four strikeouts, like you were just touching on right there. Better contact, better pitch selection, and now we're starting to see some really good results. And he's a right-handed batter, and right now he's back in the cage taking some hacks here on the field at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. You can check out Torii Hunter and the Bees take on South Bend tonight. First pitch at 7:05, and Torrey's batting third, so he is in the lineup, and I would assume he'll be in the lineup probably all 3 days while he's in South Bend. It's 7:05 tomorrow. You'll have to wake up early to see Torii on Wednesday, as it's a 10:35 a.m. first pitch here at Four Winds Field. So, again, Torii Hunter Jr. was involved in a media session earlier today at Four Winds Field. And we're going to go ahead and play this particular conversation in its entirety. It's about 10 minutes long, so give a listen. This is former Irish wide receiver Torii Hunter Jr. and his thoughts on coming back to South Bend and how things are going right now in the Angels organization.
All right. All right, sure.
Torii, what's it like to be back in South Bend?
It's pretty cool, man, to be back here. I played here once in college. We played against the Cubs, and it was a pretty cool experience to play at such a nice venue, and I'm glad to be back. I haven't been back since graduation last year, and even then it was for a split second because I had to get back to baseball, so it's really good to be back.
14 for your last 27 at the plate. What has changed for you?
Man, I just been sticking with the process, and there's a period where I was kind of struggling, but you know, my teammates, they supported me a lot. The coaches, my family, they just continued to support me and lift me up and lift my spirits, and eventually it clicked, and I'm just trying to keep it rolling from here on out.
You were so focused on football for so long. Is it part of the process now, kind of coming into its own, where you've played baseball quite a bit now the last couple of years and you're starting to feel comfortable?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely starting to feel comfortable, starting to feel like a baseball player now. You know, working out some of those football kinks that I had, you know, some of that soreness in the shoulders and whatever it may be. But it's definitely starting to pan out the way I wanted to, and starting to feel like a baseball player.
And if you could just reflect for a moment, when you think back to your football career at Notre Dame and the hit that took place at Texas, was that a life-changing moment?
I think it was. I think that definitely changed my mind about, you know, the sport. Not necessarily that I didn't like it anymore, but, you know, just to be more aware and conscious, you know, because I still have, like, memory loss from that moment. Like, right before the play, I don't really remember much besides watching it on the video. So that was definitely a scary moment for me, and it's definitely a life-changing moment.
How big of a factor was that, you determining to go the baseball route versus the football route? Because you were a good football player.
Yeah, it might have tipped the balance for me. I thought that I wanted to continue football. I thought that if I had a pretty good senior year, that I would try to come out and do the whole deal with that draft process. But after that injury and missing a game and then missing four games at the end of the season, you know, it kind of changed my mind, and I just wanted to be able to remain healthy when I got older. I kind of started looking to the future. I went the longevity route with baseball, and hopefully I can play this game a long time.
What was it like this fall watching football on TV?
It was awesome, man. I was rooting for Notre Dame. They had a really good season, and it was awesome to watch those guys and see them compete the way they did. You know, after having such a rough season my senior year, so it was good to see those guys compete and get back to who we are.
Physically, how different are you? Did you drop some size? I'm sure the lifting regimen's different. The eating regimen's probably different.
I don't think I actually gained weight. I went in spring training at 200 pounds, 201. Never been that before. And I mean, I feel good. I feel fast. I feel powerful. So I haven't really lost a lot of weight. I mean, maybe a little bit now because during the season it's hard to, you know, try to keep up that eating. But I feel fine. I feel powerful and strong.
How often do you talk to your dad about the process of working through the minors and dealing with the ups and downs of it?
Probably a couple times a week. He'll call me, you know, after maybe an 0 for a day or something like that, just to see what I was feeling and see where my head was, see what I was thinking when I was going to the plate. And, you know, he always, you know, has these little tidbits that really help me out a lot. And he doesn't really focus on the physical part of the game. He focuses on the mental because, you know, I mean, the physical has been there. I've been doing it since I was a kid. You know how to swing a bat. You know how to throw a ball, but you have to think the game. And that's what he does a good job of coaching me up on.
Do you have a little bit of a target on your back in this league? Most guys in Class A ball are pretty anonymous, but you have a name that people recognize.
I like to think that I didn't, but I mean, I don't know how other people think, but I mean, definitely when they hear Torrey Hunter on the speaker whenever I come up to bat, I don't know what emotions arise, but I'm sure they understand, like, all right, I might want to get this guy out or something like that, just to prove a point. But I mean, I'm not really sure what goes through a lot of guys' heads, but I mean, from what I've seen, a lot of guys are really cool, and I'm enjoying playing this league right now.
Do you plan to get back to campus at all the next couple days?
Yeah, hopefully tomorrow morning I'll go by and stop by the football facilities and see those guys. There's probably a lot of new faces over there. And I was going to go have lunch with the baseball coaches as well, just to catch up with those guys as well. So hopefully I can get that all in. I know we have a day game on Wednesday, so it'd be pretty tough to do anything then. But I think a couple of guys are coming out tonight, so I'll see them tonight as well, too.
And the other part of your life, you're balancing family life with being a pro ball player. What's that been like for you?
Oh, man, it's been awesome. Being married and having my first son, I'm enjoying it. I love it. And he's growing too fast for me right now. He's trying to crawl at 4 months already, teething, and it's crazy. But I love it, man. It's awesome to see him grow and see his personality shine. So I'm loving it right now.
Do you get to see them much this time of year, or is it pretty sporadic?
They are staying with me right now in Iowa. So I see them every day. But right now, they just left, so I'm kind of by myself right now, living through FaceTime right now. So I love when they're here, but I hate when they're gone. So
watching your dad play as a kid, did you think you wanted to be like him when you grew up?
I aspire to be, you know, the man he is, because he's a great guy. Not too many people don't like him. You know, he was always having fun on the field, and I aspire to be that way. But I always wanted to be better than him and try to make a name for myself. I didn't want to always live in his shadow and, you know, always be Torrey Hunter's son. But, it's always going to be that way, just because that's the way it is. But I want to be able to get to a point where, you know, I can try to make a name for myself and leave a legacy for myself the way he did.
Is his character sort of the number one thing that you try to emulate?
Oh, for sure. His character is awesome, man. And I think that's a lot of reason why he had a lot of success and a lot of success with the media and everybody else. So that's one thing that I want to continue to add to myself. So.
Torrey, I would just be curious from your perspective. You knew a younger Brandon Wimbush. Your expectations for him going forward into the season after kind of an up and down year last year?
I think that he's going to have a really good season. They have a lot of good quarterbacks in that room right now. I'm interested to see, you know, how it all pans out. I don't know if he said that Wimbush has secured the job or not, but I'm excited to see, you know, those guys battle and bring out the best in each other. So good luck to Wimbush and Book and all those guys.
You miss football?
I miss the atmosphere. I miss playing in Notre Dame, man, and hearing the fans cheer and, you know, the camaraderie with the guys. I just think it's a little different in football than baseball. I can't really explain it, but I just feel like there's a different vibe. Maybe different type of guys, you know, play different sports, but you know, miss the locker room with the football guys, and yeah, that's probably the parts that I miss. Not necessarily, you know, catching passes or different things like that, but the atmosphere, the things that don't necessarily have to do with actually playing the game, if that makes any sense. Yeah. So. Yes, that's probably what I miss most about the game.
How do you get along with the guys here?
Oh man, they're a great group of guys. We gel well. A lot of guys, I was with them last year in rookie ball in Orem, Utah, and we had a great team there, and we gel well. And I think that might be part of the reason why we're here today, all playing together at this level. So it'd be awesome if we could, you know, continue to move up together and continue to win the way we did last year. So, yeah, I mean, I love these guys. They're a great group of guys for sure.
You ever had doubts that maybe this wasn't the right path? And how big was maybe last year in short season and the success you're having this year? How big was that towards fending off that doubt?
For sure. So last year in extended spring training, before the rookie ball short season, there were definitely doubts in my head because I was struggling. I didn't feel like I was out there competing. I couldn't compete. And I don't know, man, just something clicked. And it's like the competitor in me that I just got to get better and compete and not let the guy on the mound beat me or whatever it may be. So, I mean, I don't have a doubt that, you know, I can get to the next level. I can get to the next level after that. So I just continue to work and be a competitor the way I am and try not to let the guy on the mound defeat me. So, yeah, and play defense, play really good defense. So if I can continue to do those things and have that mindset, I think that, you know, I can continue to progress forward.
How about a win-loss prediction for Notre Dame football this year? Careful now, you're going to the facility.
12-0.
There you go.
12-0.
Last questions?
So that was Torrey Hunter Jr. earlier today in the Burlington dugout answering questions from the local media. And again, Eric had a chance to talk to Torrey separately, so who knows what might be in that article in the South Bend Tribune. Is it up right now?
This was an older article that I was...
Oh, okay, so something on your screen. So it's coming.
It's coming. I'll tell you, interesting splits on him against left-handed pitching. Now, he's a right-handed batter. He's hitting 200 against right-handed pitching, 313. Home, 254. Away, 333. So very interesting splits for him so far this season.
He's facing a righty today, a righty tomorrow, and a lefty on Wednesday.
So Wednesday, he needs to have lots of coffee to be able to up that left-handed average.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. Well, of course, we're cheering for the South Bend Cubs, but we wish Torrey Hunter Jr. well. It's one of those moments where you're cheering for the home team, the South Bend Cubs, and there's a Cub broadcast, but hey, we'll just pull for Torrey Hunter on the side. How about that?
That sounds good.
Long as the Cubs win, that's all that matters. But Torrey's a great, great guy, and he's excited to be here, was gracious with his time talking to the media, was chatting with us before and after. So super, super guy. We wish him well. He's got a wife. He's got a kid now. Did you hear that? 4 months old already.
I'm ready
to start crawling.
Torrey Hunter III. They call him Trace. And he's
married. Oh, I like that.
He's married to Selena Bell Hunter, who's a model. And she's going to be trying to get back into doing some modeling. But 4 months after having the baby, not quite ready to move back into it. But so that'll help the income, because he said the checks are pretty small from the minor league. So he
that pays for the diapers.
Because they've been cutting back on a lot of things.
No question. Well, good for Torrey Hunter Jr. Great to have him back in town. Again, if you're coming out to the ballpark tonight, Torrey will bat third for Burlington, and there are seats available for tonight's game. It is beautiful. We don't have a cloud in the sky. We have sunshine and another great day, and by golly, you deserve it. So come on out and enjoy South Bend Cubs baseball. I know tomorrow is two for Tuesday. I think the Fun Zone wristbands are $2 and something else is $2. So if you're looking for affordable entertainment, hey, come on down. We've got those particular promotions coming up tomorrow, but good seats available for tonight as well. We'll have the game for you on 96.1 WSBT. All right, when we come back, we're going to bring up a South Bend Cub. Jared Young's going to join us, so stand by for that on WSBT.
Not quite ready to move back into it, but so that'll help the income, because he said the checks are pretty small from the minor league. So he
that pays for the diapers.
because they've been cutting back on a lot of things.
No question. Well, good for Torrey Hunter Jr. Great to have him back in town. Again, if you're coming out to the ballpark tonight, Torrey will bat third for Burlington, and there are seats available for tonight's game. It is beautiful. We don't have a cloud in the sky. We have sunshine and another great day, and by golly, you deserve it. So come on out and enjoy South Bend Cubs baseball. I know tomorrow is two for Tuesday. I think the Fun Zone wristbands are $2 and something else is $2. So if you're looking for affordable entertainment, hey, come on down. We've got those particular promotions coming up tomorrow, but good seats available for tonight as well. We'll have the game for you on 96.1 WSBT. All right, when we come back, we're going to bring up a South Bend Cub. Jared Young's going to join us, so stand by for that on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
As we've been talking about, former Irish wide receiver Torrey Hunter Jr. playing at Four Winds Field tonight for the Burlington Bees against the South Bend Cubs, which brought to mind this question. Top five wide receivers during the Brian Kelly era. So, our Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, Eric Hansen, has put together his top five list. And this is one of those lists that I think can be debated by our listeners. Who do you put in the top five? Who is number one? And it's going to be interesting to see who number one is. I think there's a couple of good choices.
Number four and five are kind of interesting, too, because you could have gone several different ways. But I looked at overall impact of the program, and not making the list are two guys that I think are pretty good, Equanimeous St. Brown and Deveris Daniels. And you can understand why each of them maybe didn't make the list. The other one that didn't make the list that I thought had a chance was Theo Riddick, but he was really a hybrid player and ended his career as a running back, or else I would have put him on. He was a good football player.
I would put St. Brown ahead of Daniels.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering if you would put number five in front of Daniels and St. Brown, and that is Chris Brown.
I'm a big Chris Brown, because I love the way he blocked, and I'm not taking away from his catching ability, but he did things a lot of guys since have not done.
Right. He was a great leader, too, and I just felt like he didn't have the numbers maybe St. Brown and Deveris had, but I think he impacted the program more than those guys did.
Okay, so that is number five. Number four.
I'm going with Torrey Hunter Jr. And again, I think that Torrey would have had a chance to maybe be a little higher on this list, maybe one spot higher had he been healthy during his career. But boy, I'll tell you, the injury gods were against him from the start. He at least was a very productive receiver when he was healthy.
Top five Irish wide receivers during the Brian Kelly era. Number three.
This guy was in Brian Kelly's first recruiting class, and he was named Taylor as a recruit, but he went by TJ at Notre Dame, and that's TJ Jones, who's been playing pro football the last, probably 6 or 7 years, right? 5 or 6? Yeah,
because
he
there.
Yeah, 210, 211, 212, 213. So his last year was 2013 with Notre Dame.
All right, we have now player number two on your list.
Two and one were difficult because number two is Notre Dame's all-time receiver in career yards and career catches. And the other guy is who would have been had he stayed for a senior year. And Michael Floyd bridged the Charlie Weiss and Brian Kelly. He gets credit for the Charlie Weiss years. Phenomenal receiver, but I just don't think he had as much impact. Had he been on the 2012 team, then we would have had something, but that was his first year in the pros, and so he wasn't a part of that team. Otherwise, I think he probably would have been number one on my list.
All right, so number one is?
Will Fuller.
Yeah.
You know, he had 6 catches as a freshman and then just absolutely caught fire as a sophomore and a junior, ended up going pro, was a first-round draft choice, as was Michael Floyd. Again, he was on pace to break all of Michael's records had he stayed. And he really impacted the 2015 season. And I think he's one of the reasons why Brian Kelly's still here, because if that 2015 season hadn't gone well and you put 2016 on top of that, that would have been a more difficult decision for Jack Swarbrick. So Will Fuller gets my number one pick.
5-1, Chris Brown, Torrey Hunter Jr., T.J. Jones, Michael Floyd, and Will Fuller. Final break for this hour is coming up in just a moment. We'll keep Sports Beat going next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, I will have a feature on Torrey Hunter Jr., who is in town with the Burlington Bees, former Notre Dame football player. And Darren, there's always much, much more. And that's it for the Tribune.
All right, very good. Well, since we have a couple of seconds here, let's go ahead and play a piece of audio. Gleyber Torres, who played for the South Bend Cubs in 2015, got called up at the end of April. One of the top prospects in the Cubs system, traded for Aroldis Chapman on the World Series drive. He did something a New York Yankee had never done before. Here's the audio yesterday from the YES Network, Michael Kay on the call. It was Yankees Indians tied in the bottom of the ninth inning.
High fly ball, deep center. Allen back, still back. Child leads them to a win. Yankees win 7-4. They've done it again.
Right down the middle, and he almost muscled that ball. Absolutely crushed the deep part of the bullpen. No Yankee Stadium cheapie here.
And what a greeting at home plate for a 21-year-old Yankee.
Gleyber Torres, the youngest Yankee to ever hit a walk-off home run at the age of 21, played here in South Bend in 2015, and he is having a heck of a go right now with the Yankees. 52 at-bats, hitting .327, .357 on base, 2 homers, 11 RBI. You never know who you're going to see here at Four Winds Field. Eric, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Sean joins me in a moment on WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in, with 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads.
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, 3 is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, 3 for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their 9th in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And we're back on SportsBeat Hour number 2. It is 6 minutes after 6 o'clock. SportsBeat brought to you by Budweiser, the Blackthorn Golf Club, Blackthorn Card, Laban Insurance, and Goshen Heart and Vascular on 96.1 WSBT. Sean back in our studios in Mishawaka. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs. At Four Winds Field, it's Burlington and South Bend squaring off tonight. 7:05 first pitch. Brennan King will have the pregame at 6:50 here on WSBT Radio. We'll mix in some basketball and baseball conversation, plus rapid fire over the next little bit. We'll try to sneak in a little South Bend Cubs conversation as well. Just want to start with a little different conversation, and I'm not an NBA fan, and Sean, I'm not sure how much you watched the NBA playoffs, but it's pretty remarkable whether you're listening to national radio, if you're watching a national sportscast, or reading on the internet. LeBron James is a lightning rod for all things news.
That is very true.
I mean, he is without a doubt the guy that gets more publicity than anybody else. And every time it seems like you turn on one of these shows or you read a story about him, it always comes back to one thing, comparing him to Michael Jordan, the Chicago Bulls great. And you look at LeBron, he's averaging 35 points per game in the 3 games against Toronto, 26 in game 1, 43 in game 2, 38 in game 3. He's putting Cleveland on his back. I mean, there is absolutely no doubt about it. But I guess it's just the nature of sports radio. sports TV, internet, columns. We have to have a debate. We always have to have a number one, or who's better, or who's not as good. And I'm just from a distance. Again, I'm not an NBA fan, and I'm not going to sit here to claim that I have the greatest answer if I'd rather have MJ or LeBron. But I've often wondered, why do we have to pick one? Why can't we just enjoy what Michael Jordan did for the NBA? He took the Bird Magic era and took it to another level with that Bulls dynasty. And then after Michael went away, there was, you know, a bit of a lull. The Spurs had their run, but it wasn't like Tim Duncan and David Robinson were outgoing personalities and stole the headlines. The Spurs were just methodical, and they won. Well, you had the Miami Heat come along with LeBron and all those guys, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron has kind of taken over the spotlight that was kind of left behind by Michael Jordan many moons ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it's very interesting how we have to compare the two all the time. They're not necessarily the same player. Now, they're both dynamic in their own ways, but I guess I just have to ask myself and ask you, why do we have to have a conversation all the time who's better between these two? Because you can't go wrong with either one. Personally, I give a slight edge to Michael, but again, I'm not an NBA guy that focuses on every game, so my opinion really doesn't matter in these whole things. That's just a personal preference from my standpoint. But I just kind of, I'm just like, why do we have to pick one all the time?
No, I agree. I don't think we should have to pick one. I mean, greatness is not mutually exclusive. There was no doubt that Michael Jordan was the greatest player of his era, and he was great. And I think right now, LeBron James. Now, there are other really good players, but I think LeBron James is, without a doubt, the greatest player of this era. And you kind of touched on it there. They're not the same player. They don't play the same position. They have different skill sets. And so I don't understand it either. I agree with what you're saying. I mean, Michael Jordan is great. LeBron James is great. But they're completely different kinds of players and completely different eras of basketball. And so I agree with what you're saying. I don't think that we should have to compare them. I think because they are the greatest players of their eras, that's the natural comparison. And when you start comparing championships, Michael Jordan still has more championships. But, I mean, for right now, I think the better comparison, and again, it's a little bit apples to oranges, is LeBron versus Steph Curry. Because even though Steph Curry has Kevin Durant right now, and people are going to say, and I agree with this, I mean, that LeBron James is still the better player than Steph Curry. But if you take Steph Curry away from Golden State, they have a lot more problems. But, I mean, there's no doubt LeBron James puts Cleveland on his back night in and night out, and the Cavaliers would not be where they are without LeBron James. It's just amazing. But I don't think that we should have to compare them because, again, two different players, two different skill sets, both great in their own era, but the way the game is played right now is already completely different than it was 20-plus years ago. We're going on 25 years ago when Michael Jordan was at his peak. So I don't think we need to do it, but I think it's just the natural comparison because they are the greatest players of their eras.
I was never a huge Scottie Pippen fan when the top 50 greatest players of all time came out many moons ago. I think it was around the time Shaquille O'Neal was a very young player. He made the list. That was a big conversation. Mm-hmm. So this is probably mid-90s. I wasn't a big fan of Scottie being on that list. I mean, he was a great player, but I always felt like that he got more credit because of the team he was on. If he was a Milwaukee Buck or if he was a member of the Miami Heat or New Jersey Nets, I don't know if he would have gotten the recognition that he got at the end of the day. I mean, he was a great defensive player, but when Michael Jordan had to leave for a couple of years for whatever reason, he didn't come through in clutch moments in the playoffs. He had the blow up against the Knicks on the sideline, and he went down to Houston with Barkley, and I can't remember who else was there. I think Olajuwon and maybe Kenny Smith. I don't know if Kenny was still there or not. It sounds right. But he did not have the same impact then. Now, maybe it was age at that time. again, I didn't follow it that close, so I don't want to give a strong opinion, mm-hmm. but I just felt like he got a lot more recognition than he possibly deserved being a Bull. That's not to say that the Bulls group around Michael probably was better than the current Cleveland group. Now, last year, when they won the title with Kyrie Irving, that was a pretty solid group. I don't know if they were better than the Bulls or not, but it was a lot closer. This year, there's no doubt. LeBron has willed this team to a first-round win and to go up 3-0 on Toronto. I mean, he's one of those guys right now. He's kind of the Randy White, Harvey Martin of the Super Bowl, the guys who won the MVP.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not thinking of the right guy. They won that Super Bowl. But there was a Cowboy backer that won the MVP in the Super Bowl on the losing team. Chuck
Howley.
Thank you very much. So even if LeBron doesn't win the title, how is he not the MVP of the playoffs for what he's done so far?
Right, exactly.
I mean, seriously, yeah. They are not even close to going to the conference final without LeBron James. I mean, it's not even close. So, yeah, I mean, if you want to base that on the whole conversation of who's better, I mean, LeBron is doing more with less right now.
No, that's exactly right. And, I mean, again, when you talk about eras, for one, until the latest, when Michael Jordan was in his heyday, there were only 27 teams in the NBA. There are three more teams now, and that's kind of thinned out. The talent pool has spread out because regardless of what you thought of Scottie Pippen, he was still a really good player. And the Bulls, on each of their teams, the number three guy was a little bit different every time, whether it was Rodman or you had these different guys. Kukoc was in there. But really the great teams of that era, I think you look, the top teams all had three what you would call at least stars, if not superstars, whereas now it's a lot more spread out. Now, Golden State is still kind of the outlier, but don't forget they won a championship before Kevin Durant showed up. But right now, you've got, if you're lucky if you've got two stars, I think, on any of these great teams right now. And obviously with LeBron, yeah, he had Kyrie Irving, but I mean, look at where they are again right now. And so again, because of the eras, I think the talent pool is spread out a little more. Now it does kind of lend the argument to what LeBron James is able to do, but at the same time, I mean, if you want to do that, just look at what Boston is able to do without any real stars right now. So, I mean, I just think it's apples and oranges because of the eras that they're playing in and the kind of players that they are.
LeBron's still rolling, up 3-0 on the top seed in the East.
Yep.
And, boy, they were on the brink there against Indiana. Now they look really good in the conference title game. Let's move along to Notre Dame baseball. We had Nico Cavadas of Penn High School on the program late last week. And, wow, he had quite a week against Pittsburgh in the three-game series at X Stadium. Went 5-for-9, 5 runs, a home run, 3 RBI, and 3 walks. And today was named the ACC Player of the Week when you add in the home run against Western Michigan, a 2-home-run week for Cavadas. And I'm sorry, when you think about all the talent in the ACC, for a freshman outfielder to get this recognition, or I'm sorry, he plays third base too, I mean, what a great, great accomplishment for this Penn High School player.
No, absolutely, and he's on a 10-game on-base streak right now, and at least one hit in 8 of those different 10 games. And you look at him, and when we talked to him last week, he talked about the fact that he had kind of eliminated his stride for the better part of the season. And then they went back and looked at some video and decided to go back to a stride. And now he's homered in 3 of his last 7 games. And all 5 of his home runs have come since April 13th, since he's gone back to that stride. So, I mean, it's added a lot of power, obviously, and just an amazing streak that he's on right now. 5-for-9, home run, 3 RBIs over the weekend, 3 walks as well. He's seeing it well, and he's hitting it well.
Yeah. So what about the Irish, where they stand right now?
We kind of went back.
What do you think?
They're in really good shape, and the ACC tournament starts on May 22nd. Notre Dame's going to be off this weekend because of finals, but the top 12 teams are going to make the ACC tournament. Notre Dame is currently in 11th place in the standings. They've got a .444 winning percentage. Virginia's in 12th place at .375, and then Virginia Tech at .333, Boston College at .275. So they're sitting in really good shape right now. The ACC tournament uses a pool play format, which means there are going to be four different pools of three teams. So if Notre Dame ends up being the 11 seed, which it's looking more and more like they're going to, they would be in the same pool with the 2 and 7 seeds. As of today, Clemson is the number one seed with a 692 winning percentage. There's a four-way tie for seventh place between Miami, Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh, and Wake Forest. So who the number seven seed would be. But so you could argue that when you consider the fact they've taken 2 out of 3 from Pittsburgh, they took 2 out of 3 from Wake Forest, they would even be in pretty good shape in their pool play because they also won the series against Clemson. Now, how much of that had to do with the fact that Clemson came north and it was freezing cold that weekend, who knows? But, I mean, I think you'd have to give them a fighter's chance of winning that pool if it ends up being any of those three teams.
All right, so what you're saying is there's a chance.
There's a chance. That's right.
I like it. Good deal. Good deal. And by the way, Cavadas, he hit .667 during the week, a .765 on base, and helping the Irish win 3 out of 4. Not bad for a freshman.
Not bad.
So, well, Penn High School's produced a lot of great players, and Nico, just another great player to come from that Kingsman program. It is now 6:19. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you in the midst of some baseball conversation on WSBT Radio. It's a Major League Baseball. Cubs and Cardinals met at Busch Stadium Friday through Sunday. St. Louis pulled out the win Friday. Then they were down 2 in the 9th inning Saturday, and they picked up 2 runs in the 9th and won it on a walk-off home run by Colton Wong in the 10th inning. And then last night, after the Cubs took the lead in the 14th inning on a bomb by Javier Baez, Luke Farrell, who gave up the home run to Wong Saturday, gave up another walk-off home run, this time to Dexter Fowler, a 2-run shot off the top of the right field wall. That was in the bottom of the 14th inning, and St. Louis figured out a way to sweep Chicago in that 3-game series. Hey, it's May 7th. May 7th is May 7th. So I want to get your thoughts on what this means. Let me just set this up by saying this. The only reason why I kind of think it's important maybe for St. Louis, the stat I gave a couple of weeks ago when the Cubs and Cardinals meeting at Wrigley, you take away the Cubs and Cardinals head-to-head last year, they had the same exact record against the rest of their schedule. The Cubs won 14 of 19, and that was the difference, 9 games between the Cubs and St. Louis. So if St. Louis had any chance to be competitive this year, they knew they had to figure out a way to beat the champs. And right now through 5 games, St. Louis is 4-1. Again, it's a long season. Chicago's going to be fine. It still would be a shock if they don't win the division. But I think the only thing I take away from it, Sean, is at least St. Louis has shown some resistance and maybe shown the Cubs are a little different team this year, that they've been able to beat them early on. In fact, they've almost matched their win total against the Cubs already, and it's May the 7th.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I mean, it's just a really inconsistent team. I mean, and when you look at it, Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber, they've been about the most consistent guys in the Cubs lineup so far, and those two guys in consistency over the last couple years, hit especially from a hitting standpoint, I don't think that those words would go hand in hand, consistency and Javi Baez or Kyle Schwarber. Do you?
No.
So I mean, out of nowhere, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, they're still trying to get it figured out. Now they've each homered a little bit more over the last week or so, but I mean, Baez leading the team, 9 home runs, 29 RBIs, and a 969 OPS. Schwarber has a 925 OPS, but Bryant is 911. Rizzo is 561. And I just, when you throw in the fact that the pitching is up and down, it's just really inconsistent. And it's still hard to figure out exactly what this team is. I mean, I think we can both look at it and say, there's all this talent. Sooner or later, it's going to come together. That is what happened last year, but it's just a really inconsistent, hard team to figure out right now.
Well, I went into the season thinking that St. Louis was going to have really good starting pitching, and I disagreed with some of the Chicago media saying the Cubs were going to have the best starting rotation. I just wasn't convinced on you, Darvish. We had these conversations. I think you asked in rapid fire, who would you rather sign, Darvish or Arrieta? And that's right. Before the Cubs made the decision. I said I wouldn't want either one. Yeah. Now, right now, Arrieta has turned out to be a much better pitcher than you, Darvish. So I really felt pretty comfortable with St. Louis's rotation. Plus, they get Alex Reyes back, who was a flamethrower before going down with Tommy John surgery. I knew about Jack Flaherty coming, a young starting pitcher that's ready to go into their rotation. And with what they had, I felt pretty good. And starting pitching always gives you a chance. Now, again, I had the Cubs at 98 wins. I had the Cardinals at 90 and Milwaukee at 88. And you know what? I wouldn't be shocked if that's the way things panned out. But if you have starting pitching, it is the great equalizer.
Yeah.
And that's almost like a rainstorm in football. Rain can equalize two teams in which one is better than the other and make it a competitive game. Starting pitching can make the difference. And I had no doubt St. Louis would be able to pitch well in their rotation. Wasn't sure about the bullpen. The offense, I felt like they were a hitter short, that maybe a Moustakas at third made a lot of sense. They didn't go that route. But as long as they continue to have starting pitching, I think they're going to have a say in the division. I still don't believe they're going to win it. I think the Cubs will figure things out. I mean, look where they were last year at this time. Look where they were at the All-Star break. And look the way things turned out. I mean, they won walking away. So I think starting pitching that St. Louis puts out there, and with two guys they have not even put on their team yet that's going to help them, I think that is a really interesting aspect to what St. Louis still could become in the coming months. And they have a loaded farm system. If they need to go get a hitter and if they want to use those chips, they will be able to do so. And again, that's the big question, what the Cubs might be able to do. That's a huge question mark.
Yeah, and when you look at starting pitching, Jose Quintana has not held up his end of the bargain this year so far. He's pitched a little bit better at times, but, and I think the biggest thing with the money they shelled out on Yu Darvish, he has looked more like the guy who pitched for the Dodgers in the postseason last year than during the regular season. He hasn't been there at all. He's got an ERA of 6 right now. So when you talk about starting pitching being the equalizer, they had that one stretch during the 5-game winning streak, but other than that, they've all been up and down, and John Lester has still looked like a guy who is showing his age so far. And again, he's pitched well in spots, but consistency is just the big word for me all the way around.
Long way to go, but at least St. Louis has showed a little resistance, and maybe they're going to hang around a little more than everybody expected. Long way to go. Still a bunch of meetings between these two teams. And by the time they play again, Mr. Bryant and Mr. Rizzo will have their normal numbers, and then everything will look a little different with that Chicago Cub lineup. But who is Yu Darvish going to become? That might be the key element. But the one thing is, Sean, that the Cubs can do compared to everybody that has a lot of money to use, like the Yankees and the Red Sox, if they make a mistake, they can fix it with a big deal, and they can spend more money. That's the advantage of being in that major market. So even if they strike out on Yu Darvish, and it's a long deal, I know that, and there's a long way to go, but they still have the ability to fix that problem. If the Brewers do something like that, or if the Indians, more than likely they don't have the resources to fix that. So they have the great equalizer, good old cash. If they need something, they can go get it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. They do still have the resources, that's for sure.
Well, your Royals kind of know what that feels like. If they pick somebody that's wrong, they have to. I mean, look at Alex Gordon. You just have to live with it.
The long-term ramifications. That's absolutely right. That's why if you're a small market team like Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, and your team is even contending, you have to feel pretty darn good about it, because it's so hard and the margin for error is so small with those teams with the money that they're able to spend. It is. It's just a big difference when you have the money to make up for some of those mistakes. I mean, just look at the fact that the Cubs are eating Jason Hayward right now. They still won a World Series as a result. For right now, anyway, it's still a really small snapshot into it. They're kind of eating Yu Darvish right now, and they hope that it's going to pay off. But if it doesn't, I mean, if Darvish, over the long haul, if he's still pitching like this at the end of the season or even at the end of next season, then there's another big one that you've got to eat.
Very interesting trade deadline. It's going to be very fascinating to see what the Cubs might be able to do. We'll take a timeout. Sean will host Rapid Fire next. It is 6:27. South Bend Cubs baseball coming up. Pregame at 6:50. Again, Torrey Hunter Jr., the former Irish wide receiver, in the lineup for Burling tonight. He is batting third for the Bees. We'll have the game coming up at 7:05 on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. All right, SportsBeat continues. It is 6:33. SportsBeat brought to you by Budweiser, Goshen Heart and Vascular, Labored Insurance, and Blackthorn Golf Club's Blackthorn Card. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. Sean will host Rapid Fire.
Let's start with a football question for you, Darren. Do you buy or sell Brandon Wimbush starting every game for the Irish this season?
I will buy that, my friend.
Okay.
I will buy that. And, well, let's take injury out of the conversation.
Okay.
Can I say that?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
You're saying barring injury, he'll start everyone.
Correct.
So it will not be, if he doesn't, it won't be performance related.
Correct.
All right.
That is my opinion. I think they will try to go as long with Brandon Wimbush as they can. I think he will show improvement. I'm not going to predict 60% completion percentage. If he could get to 57, 58, I think that would be really, really good. So I'm going to put my chips in the middle of the table, and I'm going to say Wimbush is the guy, not having injuries in the conversation for 2018. So that's me. I can't wait to hear your answer. This is a tough one right off the bat.
Well, and it's funny because my answer is more predicated on the fact that there probably will be some kind of injury at some point, I guess. And that's why I'm selling it. Now, it makes it tougher if we're only talking performance-related like you, but I just look at the fact that, I mean, just look at last year. Even with Wimbush kind of being up and down, he did have an injury, and so Ian Book had to start a game. And then you look at 2015, Malik Zaire goes down right away, and it ends up being DeShone Kizer the rest of the year. And, I mean, so all the time, especially at the quarterback position, it seems like you can almost count on one game where somebody's going to be hurt and something's going to happen. Now, if I'm going to throw out injuries, to me that becomes even tougher. I'm amazed that you're looking at it and saying, if we're only going on performance, how confident you are that it's going to be Brandon Wimbush. Because, I mean, I think we're both in agreement that if he can look like he looked in the blue-gold game, then yeah, sign me up for that. I think there's going to be no issues. And, I mean, I've even got another rapid-fire question that we're going to get to tomorrow. Since you said that, it just popped into my mind. It's like, bam, we're going to hit this tomorrow. So I don't know, though. I mean, you look at he can't have a game. Look, I look at it this way. If he has a game where he starts off slowly and against a good opponent like he did against LSU, Ian Book comes in and goes 14 of 19, then you could very easily see the very next game where all of a sudden Ian Book is starting. So, again, I'm factoring injuries into it, and I'm placing it more, I think, on that than performance. Okay. So I will sell it because of that. But I don't disagree with you saying if you throw out injuries, then it's going to be Wimbush all the way. But, again, we'll take this next level in tomorrow's Rapid Fire. How about that?
How much zone read will there be? That's a big question, too.
Yeah. Very good question.
Not a strength of his, I would say. Book was a little better at that.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. That's true. All right, fill in the blank on this next one. Former Irish linebacker Greer Martini getting signed to the Green Bay Packers roster after a tryout recently is blank.
I'm happy for him, but I think it's a very difficult task to make that roster. I mean, there's not many guys who are going to make the team just because of special teams. So I'm happy he's getting the opportunity, but I think that's probably a long shot.
Yeah.
Making the opening week roster. Maybe he makes the practice squad. That'd be great for him.
That would. I mean, I think that should probably be the realistic goal, just at least trying to make the practice squad. I mean, the biggest thing to come out of it, he's on the 90-man roster for the Packers, and it means he's going to be at training camp this summer with the team. So, I mean, that's way ahead of where he thought he was going to be. I mean, it doesn't guarantee him a job, but at least he's got a chance. And I mean, that's really good for a guy who didn't even get invited to the NFL Combine, to be on the 90-man roster, to have a chance to make a team. And I mean, now I didn't sit there and break down game film of Greer Martini and Riley Bulla. You remember Bulla, the former Michigan State linebacker. Mm-hmm. He ended up making the Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster last year. So, I mean, I think if a guy like Bulla has a chance, a guy like Martini has a chance, I think their games are fairly similar. Bulla is just a shade faster. Martini ran a 4.8 at Pro Day, which isn't great, but it's still, it's not bad. 4.6, 4.7, right around that range is typically kind of average for an inside linebacker. So, I think it's just the fact that now he's got a chance. He's going to be at training camp, and at the very least, he's going to get in an exhibition game or two. He'll have some film and maybe have a chance to make another team if he doesn't make it with Green Bay.
Okay.
All right, let's shift to some baseball. The Cubs' current five-game losing streak has them in fourth place and 3.5 games back in the NL Central. So, scale of 1 to 10, what chances do you give them to be in first place by the end of the month?
Can I look at their schedule?
Sure. And I can kind of give it to you. Because I looked at it here today. They've got Miami to start tonight. They've got the White Sox after that. They've also got Cincinnati. Those are 10 games right there against sub-500 teams. But they've got the Atlanta Braves. They've got a couple games with Cleveland. They've got a series with San Francisco, a series with Pittsburgh, and one game against the Mets to close the month. So you've got 10 against sub-500 teams, 13 against teams at 500 or better.
I will say that on June 1st, the Chicago Cubs will not be in first place.
Okay.
I think you've got four teams bunched together, and I think it would be unwise to say all three are going to collapse kind of at the same time, and the Cubs play 500 or better and pass all of them. So I will just assume one of those three teams ahead of them will play better than 500 baseball, which would make the Cubs climbing over them more difficult. So I'm going to go with that the Cubs will not be in first place at the end of the month, but by the end of June, I think the answer would be different.
Okay. Yeah, and I go back to what we were talking about earlier. The consistency is just, they're just so up and down. It's still hard to figure out who they are. They follow a five-game winning streak when it looks like they've turned the corner with a five-game losing streak. So, and it, when you throw in the fact that they get swept by their biggest rival, the Cardinals, and the whole thing, I'm going to give it a 6. I think there's a chance.
Oh, that's right. You wanted a number.
And that's all right. But there's just as good a chance that they'll be at or below 500. So the fact that they have a decent chunk of games against teams below 500 gives them a chance. But what are they going to be against the better teams? I mean, that's where they've got to start making their money sooner or later if they're a legitimate contender.
I will follow procedure. I'll say 4.
Okay. So I'm.
And by the way.
Uh-huh.
I was just going to tell you this since we're talking about the Cubs. Eloy Jimenez, who they traded last year, he's playing in the Sox AA team down in Birmingham. They played the Cubs AA affiliate this weekend. It was a five-game series. I wonder if he was a little excited. He went 11 for 22, 2 home runs and 5 RBI.
And there you go.
His average is up to 319 with a 347 on base, 6 homers in 17 games.
And the Cubs have Jose Quintana.
Story for another day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay, Joe Maddon's going with an all right-hand batting order tonight against the Marlins. And the Marlins do have a lefty on the mound. But Anthony Rizzo, Kyle Schwarber, Jason Hayward are all going to be on the bench. Good idea, bad idea?
Well, it's hard to ever argue against Maddon, his use of analytics. He looks at the numbers and tries to find the best alternatives. I did see on the ticker today that lefties have little success against this guy.
Right.
You know, from my standpoint, Sean, I love the numbers. I love the analytics. But it's awfully hard to take Anthony Rizzo out of the lineup, struggling or not. Now, maybe he's due for a day off. And if that's the case, Sean, I think it makes sense to do it tonight. But, boy, it's awfully hard to take him out of the lineup. And Hayward, eh. That doesn't bother me.
That's exactly right.
Schwarber, I can understand, but just from my standpoint, unless he is just in need of a day off, I continue to put Anthony Rizzo out there. I just have too much respect for him, and no matter who the pitcher is on the mound, I'll take my chances with him.
Yeah, 0.95 is the batting average lefties have against Jarlin Garcia, who's going to be the starter, to go back to what you were saying about the batting average. But so you're trading Anthony Rizzo for Victor Caratini, and I mean, lefty or not, I think I'd still rather have Anthony Rizzo in there. So the order is going to go Albert Almora Jr., Ben Zobrist, Chris Bryant, Javi Baez. I mean, that's still a pretty good
sure
four. Wilson Contreras, Victor Caratini, Addison Russell, Ian Happ. And I agree with what you're saying. Well, no one's going to argue about Schwarber and Hayward being out, but Russell is the one. It's like, but again, I don't know what his days off and all that kind of stuff are like you're talking about.
And Sean, just an observation on Happ, and we've documented his strikeout problems, had a handful of strikeouts last night, a couple of walks against St. Louis. But I was around Ian for, I guess it was about 3 months, 3.5 months in 2015 here with the South Bend Cubs. And he is a very laid-back, calm individual. Nothing gets him too excited. Never saw him really get overly excited about anything. Very down to earth. And watching him with the Cubs, he's kind of been that way throughout his career. Now, I don't watch every at bat. There's a lot more Cub fans out there that can probably add on to this comment.
Right.
But I think it was his second or third strikeout last night. He swung at a pitch that was way outside for strike three, and he just kind of swung the bat aggressively back. And that's really the first time I've noticed frustration set in with him. And I know we had the discussion the other day about should they put him in the minors, and we both agreed it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to take him out of the spotlight a little bit and just allow him to settle in. But I think the Cubs are going to move forward, and he's right back in the lineup tonight.
Yeah, he's lower in the order, so maybe that helps him a little bit, but I guess time's going to tell. He just looks like a guy, and I agree with what you're seeing, just looks like a guy who is really struggling right now, and obviously the high strikeout numbers and the whole thing show it. All right, do we have time for one more, or do you want to wrap it up?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's go one more.
Albert Pujols, the former Cardinal, got his 3,000th hit over the weekend, so my question to you, Darren, considering the direction the game is currently heading, do you see the importance of 3,000 hits diminishing?
I don't. I still think that's one heck of a standard. You look at the number of people that have got to 3,000 through the years. It is an elite club. I think it will last the test of time. I wonder if the 500 club will look different maybe in 25 years, but Sean, I still think the 3,000 hit plateau is a great plateau, especially with the focus on just getting on base. You don't care how, walks, hits, hit by pitch. The ability to get to 3,000 hits, still an unbelievable accomplishment. And with the focus on getting on base somehow, some way, tell you what, getting a base hit still the toughest way to go. It's not easy. Go ahead.
Well, and that's maybe my question should be, do you see the number of guys who reach 3,000 hits decreasing then? Do you think it's going to be tougher and tougher for guys to get to 3,000? I saw Bill James has this thing where he can calculate the chances. Mike Trout, one of the best players of this era, has just a 14% chance to ever get to 3,000, according to Bill James. So it just, it seems like because of what you're talking about, that it's just going to be, we're going to see fewer and fewer guys have a chance to get to 3,000. So maybe that does increase the stature of 3,000 because less guys are going to have the chance to get there. But that's
very
just
true.
Yeah, I saw there's a current Royals prospect, Chase Vallett, who has 91 plate appearances so far this year. He has five home runs, two doubles, 17 walks. No singles in 91 plate appearances.
Wow.
I mean, that's kind of a microcosm of what the game is right now, right?
I love the game 20 years ago compared to now a whole lot more. Got to be honest with you.
Yep.
And I love this game, but It's a strikeout home run game, and I just don't think that's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Sports Beat brought to you by Blackthorn, Leavitt Insurance, Goshen Heart and Vascular, and Budweiser. Sean, let's do it again tomorrow.
Sounds good to me. Have a good one.
All right, thank you. We got South Bend Cubs baseball coming up in just a moment. Brendan King will have the pregame next on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.